You're listening to a Zone Radio podcast, zoneradio.co.za.
12 minutes past four, and it's time for this month's Education Zone. And we have Marley in the studio, and with her, she has a lady by the name of Kerry, and the two of them are going to be talking about matters relating to education. Good afternoon, ladies.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Richard. Welcome, Kerry.
Thank you, Marley.
Yes. Kerry, I thought, this is the purpose of this space is for people to come and talk about education, sharing stories. And so today I wanted to ask you, when I invited you for this interview, what made you to say yes, that you would like to take up this platform?
I think many, many things. One of the I suppose keywords or things that is quite close to my heart is creating awareness. The other thing, and I'm talking about neurodiverse children. So these are children who have a singular or a combination of challenges around how their brains work or that their brains work differently, is to demystify and start to normalize. So I guess those were the two lights at the end of the tunnel I saw.
And so then, Kerry, if you think about listeners out there, what are you hoping for them to walk away with you today, listening to your story?
Insight, increased awareness, maybe a deepened understanding.
Okay. All right. So then I wanted you, can you maybe share with us, because you recently made a decision about, because you're not just a mom, but you're also an educator yourself.
Right.
But for the purpose of today, I really want you to, let's focus on your journey as a mom.
Right.
With your particular child, and what was your experience?
So I think one of the lessons I've learned as a mom, the one that was the biggest surprise to me, was that I thought I would be able to identify and notice any difficulties that my own child might have, and openly embrace them. Part of my journey has been certainly noticing them and having the awareness of what they look like and how they present. I think the challenge in that for me as a mom was what that meant for my child. And as a teacher, you so often speak with parents about the challenges their children are facing, and you speak to them in the context of the classroom, and you are not always aware that there is a life outside of the classroom that these parents are facing on a daily basis, getting ready for school, going to extramurals, going on family outings, taking a trip to the grocery store. And those little everyday events can come with multiple challenges. And as a teacher, I think as a teacher, sometimes you are not aware of the enormity of what parents are facing on a daily basis.
So then, Kerry, I'm just thinking now, because you are an educator and you're a mom. So if you have to think, because I think there's a slight difference possibly between just being a mom, but you've also got that
educational.
And so how do you marry the two, almost, like, Kerry? And what is it that you can share with others? Maybe specifically for parents that's not necessarily educators, but they, you know what I'm saying?
Yes, I think what you're saying is, so that maybe in my case, I was able to see the things, like the reading wasn't coming maybe as fast as it needed to, or I could see the sensory behaviors or the fussiness around food or the textures of clothing or the obsession or the hyper focus or the with particular toys or those kind of things. So that's what I'm able to notice as a teacher. So perhaps what I would say to parents or is to, you know, when you start to get feedback on your child, that is not feedback you were expecting or that you're finding difficult to hear or that you maybe even are disagreeing with, the thing that's been really helpful for me is picking a 4 or 5, people in my life who I really trust, who I can bounce my experiences off, that I know will give me open and honest feedback and be real with me. I know what my personality is and I know what I need, and my personality needs to be supported. Mm-hmm. And so I chose people who would play that role for me. And while I was getting feedback from teachers and his schooling experience and noticing his emotional decline, I was using those people to support me.
Thank you, Kerry. Kerry, do you want to share a few examples, almost like what was your experience? What was his experience, like his school experience?
Well, that was very challenging because grade one was the COVID lockdown year. So that was basically no school. Grade two was semi-COVID lockdown. By the time he got to the third grade, he had not established a regular school attendance, a regular homework routine, a regular extramural routine. Heading into the third grade came with all those things that he technically should have had 24 months experience of. And then, so he had that to navigate. But that was when we really got to see the things that were tricky for him. And I think a daily experience would be, you know, my phone would ring and he'd been in tears because somebody kicked his lunchbox out of the front of the line. And as far as he, you know, his understanding was if your lunchbox is in the front of the line, that gets you the position to be the line leader. And I think for many children, they can overcome that, make meaning of it and move on, or they just brush it off. For my child, it would become a 3 or 4 day debrief, and it would prevent him from sleeping. It would prevent him from being present to learning, because understanding the social dynamics of a event like that are so much more tricky for him. Another, I'm just trying to think of some, I mean, there's so many, but also just to, you know, protect his, another one that I think comes up a lot for people who are neurodivergent is food, and what they will and won't eat. And, you know, at the end of a long work day, when you're tired, you've still got, you know, 4 or 5 chores on the list and you've made dinner and it's not going to go down with the child. You're at the end of your tether, you're tired and, you know, you've got this little person going, I don't eat that and I don't want that and I don't like this and I. And then you know, I live very much by the fight the battle, win the war. Mm. And I think that it's a cliched statement. And I think it applies to many contexts in life. It's one I make use of frequently and certain things I don't even notice anymore. Mm. So, you know, we go out into public and he's wearing odd socks and the socks must be tight and they must come up to his knees. Yes. And then one day he decides that leg mustn't have a tight sock anymore. And then, you know, people will say things to me like, does he dress himself? Or can he not put a pair of socks together? And I've never fought that fight. It's just not worth it.
So thank you, Kerry. That really gives a lovely overview of your particular child, but also in general. I think those that's listening in possibly can can recognize some of the examples that you gave.
I've got a question here that has come through on the WhatsApp, and you know, sometimes when we talk about these things, we assume people know. Somebody's asking, what is neurodivergent?
Ah, okay. Okay. So I think it's very important for me to just say up front, I'm not an expert on neurodivergence. I'm not a clinical psychologist. I'm not a pediatric psychiatrist. I do not diagnose. I am a teacher. So neurodivergent is a term or a phrase that is changing rapidly as we learn more, do more research, begin to understand more. But it's generally speaking an umbrella term for all people, so adults and children, who struggle with labels or diagnoses like ADD, ADHD, spectrum disorder, sensory motor integration, dyspraxia, dyslexia, dysgraphia, dyscalculia. There's oppositional defiance disorder in there. There are many. And as the years go by and with increasing amounts of research with a heightened emotional awareness compared to, say, 15, 20 years ago, the experts are discovering that really it's a Venn diagram when they overlap. You know, a couple of years ago, 5 years ago, even 10 years ago, you were ADHD or you were ADD. Now the insight or the understanding is you have elements of those types of behaviors. You have elements of sensory motor integration behaviors. You have elements of maybe some spectrum behaviors. So basically the opposite of neurodivergent would be neurotypical. Maybe that's also a different way to explain it. Does that make sense? Does that help?
I think in layman's terms, what you're basically saying is these are people that are just differently wired.
Yeah.
That's kind of what it sounds like to me.
Yeah, I think it's a personal thing, especially if you have neurodivergence in your family. I think there is another way of saying it, which is that we live in a systemic society which often doesn't make room for everybody. Mm-hmm. And so when somebody doesn't fit, instead of looking at how to make it fit, we look at what we can call them so we can manage it more easily. That can be very, very helpful. A diagnosis can be immensely valuable in knowing how to move forward and what interventions to put in place. Mm-hmm. Okay. So it's a fine line.
Yeah. So then, Kerry, what made you decide? Because you made a decision, I think it was like towards last year, in your search for what will be the best place for him to learn, because that wasn't a very easy journey. And you made a decision that maybe it's why not start a place where he can, like run a school or small little
right.
environment where you don't have to deal, or he hasn't have to deal
yes.
with all this.
So I didn't, my husband and I had no difficulty noticing or coming to the conclusion that mainstream school was not appropriate for our child. So that was easy to do. Finding a place where he was comfortable, that was a challenge. Mm. I like this phrase. A friend of mine who runs a school also talks about de-traumatizing them from mainstream. And there is nothing wrong with mainstream at all. It's just not, doesn't fit everybody. So we put Sizwe in an educational environment that works for him. What that did for me was made me realize, so my experience as a mom of, I've got actually two neurodivergent children, and the education system that I work in, I don't work in a mainstream government school. I have become increasingly aware that we are in consistently trying to put square pegs into round holes. And so that took me to the place where I have started to seriously explore and think about starting my own school. I've been teaching for 18 years. I've taught across multiple educational environments. I'm increasingly seeing children with facilitators, children in OT, children in speech, children in social skills classes. And I do believe those are helpful and supportive. I also believe that school is the one institution that hasn't come into the 21st century. Even churches have disco balls and coffee bars and bar stools and cocktail tables and flashy lights. And some of the newer church buildings don't even look like churches. Yet schools have remained as they have been since, I don't know how long ago. And the world that we live in has changed radically. So it's time for schools to change. And I want to have a school that speaks into what I think the changes are, that will support children who are not round holes, square holes, or whatever. Round pegs for round holes.
Yes, I'm just thinking now, Kerry, because there's two things. Because the one is then, as a parent, as in an educator, it sounds like you are on this path of finding, making this happen. Yes. For your child. I'm also aware of those that doesn't have that.
Yes.
But I think it would be lovely to share with the listeners what is some of the challenges in this path of finding a place where he can feel like this is my place.
So, I mean, my child is happy in his schooling environment. But for me to move forward with the school that I would like to start, one of my biggest challenges has been finding a space. And when I say space, I mean a property. That doesn't necessarily mean a house. It just means a space that has four walls, a roof, a toilet, and a garden, or something like that. So that's been immensely challenging. I've been quite surprised at my own creativity in what I've done to pursue an appropriate space. And my sense of it is as soon as I have that space, the school will, you know, the background, the legwork is happening in the background all the time. Because I am very passionate about creating a space for families. It's not just children. Because children sometimes have siblings. They also have parents. And this journey for the journey of neurodivergent or trauma brain for parents is as challenging to navigate as it is for the child themselves. So that already for me is something I see as such an important part of a school journey. So the work is the groundwork is there. Infrastructure in terms of the systems and policies is there. My current major hurdle is, where do I make this happen? Where is the space?
So if you have to make a request for the public out there, what would be your request?
Am I only allowed to make one request? I think if I were, you know, if I was to say to the listeners out there, I would say two things. One is, you know, when you see a child in inverted commas, misbehaving in a public space, really look and really notice. And maybe before you make a comment about bad manners or being rude, maybe just take an extra 5 seconds to think, is this child struggling with something in this environment right now that's making them panic and shut down? And the second thing I would ask is, if there are any listeners out there who are aware of a space in our valley that could work for a small group of children to learn in a way that best suits them, mm-hmm. it would be fantastic if you could tell me about it.
Oh, wonderful. So, Katie, just to wrap up, I thought it would be lovely for you to share with the listeners. You said something very profound the other day about your own personal learning. And I think it will be lovely to share that, if you don't mind.
But I
you
say were profound saying, things all the time.
Specifically around this journey that you've been on and the possibility that, you know, like you've been driving this journey. Maybe even those that's listening in can take you on a different path.
Oh, I was saying that I've been you're going to have to help me remember. I've been so, I suppose, driven or sure about – sure, let's say that. I've been so sure about how I was going to make this work.
Yes.
And I've been coming up against quite a few very tightly shut doors. Maybe it's time to – notice that it's not me that's going to make it work.
Beautiful.
But it's the community. Yeah.
So, yes. Richard, I would like to wrap up.
Be my guest.
And thank you for the listeners that was listening in to Kerry really
sharing
from
me.
Her heart
thank
as a mom, but also as an educator and your experiences and what you ask the communities out there. So thank you, Katie, for saying yes when I invited you.
Yeah, you're
yes.
welcome. Here thank we you go. For giving me the space.
Yes.
Before you go, I just want to ask you, I'm sure there are many people, parents like yourself, otherwise, you know, with what's the word, neurodivergent children. And there are many of them in the valley. And you know, looking at it as a 66-year-old, I kind of see more of it. And maybe it's just because we've become more aware of different things, you know, and I'm sure there are many parents that are I wouldn't want to use the word struggling, but are dealing with these, and again, I don't be careful how I use my words, conditions or you know, that, and the education system, as I understand it, what you're saying, the mainstream education system is already geared and cope with that. And you're looking for an alternative, okay? But what about parents who are there support groups for this? Is there anywhere where a parent is listening to us right now says, you know what, I'm hearing what Kerry's saying, and I'm recognizing, goodness me, I didn't know that. I'm recognizing that behavior in my child, but now where do I go with that? Is there any place where people can go that you're aware of in this valley? I'm not talking about going over the mountain.
Yes.
I'm talking about in the valley. Can people get hold of you?
Yes. So there is a parent support group that I'm aware of that runs out of Sun Valley Primary School. And I think it is run by a lady called Sarah. And I only know that because I recently attended a webinar that she ran that was an interview panel of four parents who are navigating the journey of neurodivergence. So that's Sarah. So there's that. And then I'm not a big social media person. I am aware of support groups, if you want to call it that, on Facebook, but that's like a Facebook page. And then there are lots of WhatsApp groups. I've found that support groups can actually make you feel worse for various reasons. But I think if you got hold of Sun Valley Primary School, you would be able to get in touch with their parents. They have some lovely support structures and efficient, effective support structures for children who are neurodivergent, and they are supporting their education in a great way.
Okay, so Sun Valley Primary, so somebody listening here, that could be their starting point.
Yes.
Beautiful. All right, that's cool. I wish you well with what you're trying to achieve.
Thanks.
And I thank you for coming in this afternoon to chat to us about it, and I certainly hope you find your piece of ground. And
thank you, me too.
That you realize your dream, but somehow I believe that you've come to the realization that it's not your dream.
Yeah.
It's a community dream.
Mm.
So thank you very much for coming in. Marley, is that it?
That's it. Thank you very much, Richard.
Thanks, ladies. Take care, and we'll talk again in a month's time.
Yes.
Bye-bye.